It also revealed their rear team had several more pre-planned fallback positions.
"Recall the drone," he said in disgust.
He activated the all-marine comm connection.
"Sinner, the bastard seemed to have learned a thing or two about proper ground combat."
"We were coming to the same conclusion after taking a look up high."
"What do you think?"
"Retreat to the shuttles. Fly into the colony and face them from behind the walls. Assuming, of course, Kate got rid of the heavy weapons and they aren't already assaulting the place."
"I concur.
Once we get to the shuttles, let's plan to approach on different vectors, just in case."
"Saint?"
"Yes, Sinner."
"I'm officially done enjoying this war against the birds. We need to finish this thing up."
A chorus of laughs followed her words, and Saint responded with,
"Concur. There are bars to be opened."
"I hope you'll reserve a seat for me," Sinner said.
"Seat? Hell, you're going to be the bartender, while I..."
"Sit in the back with a beer, Gunnery Sergeant,"
Hugo Galano finished his sentence.
"Exactly. So, let's get to the shuttles and get rid of these avian bastards."
Chapter 7.
"Negative,"
Kate responded over the comm system that linked the Washington, the Pandora, and the Marines on the ground.
"I can't provide air support. I'm too busy heading back to save Cross's ass."
Sinner laughed and said,
"Acknowledged, Commander. We understand. You like him more than us?"
"Not really," Kate replied. "You all are just better at taking care of yourselves."
"Stow that nonsense,"
Cross growled in what he considered an appropriately ferocious manner. He adjusted the channel to exclude the Marines and said,
"Kate, our sensors show you're bringing a friend along."
"Well, I figured if you brought new friends to the party, it was all right if I did too. Besides, so far, he's mostly harmless."
On the main display, the trap that had been sprung on them was clear. Four additional ships had joined the two in orbit, and the seventh enemy vessel trailed the Pandora and traded shots with her as they rose through the atmosphere.
"The Washington will chart a course toward you. We'll try to scrape him off as you come up, and then you can go after any that are trailing us."
"Got it,"
Kate replied.
"Figure out the vectors and make it happen, Lee," he said. "Walsh, let's use some standard torpedoes and energy against this guy. The ship should be a little stressed coming out of the atmosphere anyway, and I'm sure Kate has knocked down its shield some. We'll save the surprises for the other ships."
"Aye, Captain," replied his weapons officer. "The computer has catalogued each of the ships, finally. This sensor block sucks."
Matthews shook his head in frustration at his controls.
"The two ahead are cruisers. One of the four that just arrived is a rammer. The other three are a configuration we haven't seen yet. Oh, and the one coming up from the planet is also a cruiser."
Before Cross could reply, the vectors intersected, and the Pandora flashed by before the Washington. Walsh opened up with the port broadside as they cut in front of the trailing ship, and its shields buckled. Blasts from the aft weapons as they curved away stabbed deep into it, sparking a series of explosions that consumed the alien vessel.
"One for the good guys," said Walsh with a grin. "Good shooting, Weps,"
Cross answered. The icons for the enemy ships altered positions on the display, and the ones on Cross's tail broke off. The six enemies converged and fell into formation in a shallow, inverted V-shape. The cruisers took the lead on the ends, and the trio of ships arranged themselves in a staggered line in the middle. The rammer pushed out ahead, cutting down the angles from which they could engage the others.
"Time?" Cross asked.
78 seconds to engagement, Captain Cross," answered Pandora's lovely tones.
"What do you think, Kate?"
"Those three ships probably work in tandem, and the rammer is there to protect them."
"Agreed. The Washington can't stand up to a direct hit from the rammer, and I'm not sure your ship can either."
"Perhaps one, but it would be quite debilitating,"
replied the Pandora.
"Okay, then," Cross said. "You have the best chance of surviving against the unknown ships until we discover what they are. So I'll go high and introduce the cruisers and the rammers to some of our new weaponry. You can go low and try to take out one of the trio."
"Sounds good,"
she replied. Cross was sure he heard a hint of uncertainty in her tone.
Or maybe it was just exhaustion. His blood rose into his face as he considered all the Zhroshin had cost him, all they'd cost humanity, and the murmured voices of his crew faded into the distance. He summoned his resolve and said, "Lee, execute." The Washington arced upward. "Walsh, on my command, energy and new torpedoes at the cruiser. Don't feel the need to save any. Fire our bow weapons at the rammer. Let's try to get his attention. Send a couple of the new toys his way, too." "Yes," Walsh replied. "I've been waiting to see what these can do in a real fight." "Stand by," Cross said. When he judged the trajectories correct to prohibit the enemy rammer from getting in the way, he gave the order. "Fire!" Unlike standard torpedoes, which left the Washington in a trail of fire, these were ejected by a forcible puff of air that came from their backstage. Once free of the ship, they locked onto their target and discarded the spent ejection stage to expose the engines. The missiles rocketed away toward their targets at half again the speed of traditional torpedoes. A beam reached out from the nose of the torpedo, invisible to human sight and probably somewhere at the top of the range the enemies could see. A tiny but powerful computer modulated the beam, testing the target's response to varying frequencies. Before the missile had covered half the distance, it had identified the frequency algorithm that powered the enemy shields. Four tiny ports on the torpedo emitted laser blasts, low-powered enough to sustain through the rest of the flight, but high-powered enough to drain the enemy's shields. By the time the torpedoes reached the targets, the shields were down below quarter strength, and the first missile strike eliminated them. The many that followed pulverized the ships, the explosions rendering them into pieces so small the sensors couldn't detect them. Cross whistled. "I take back what I said earlier, Walsh. That right there was nice shooting." His weapons officer gave a cackling laugh in response. The weapons targeted at the rammer arrived a little later and knocked the big ship around, but failed to penetrate. "Guess that would have been too much luck for one day," Cross said. "Lee, evasive theta. Let's try to draw the rammer out of Kate's way. If he fails to follow, abort, and Walsh can take some more shots at him." While they'd been engaging their targets, Kate had been maneuvering to find the perfect angle for her attack run. She came in on one side, trying to position the Pandora so that one of the three ships interfered with the attack vectors of the other two. Cross watched, approving of the strategy, until the mystery of the new ships was revealed. The ship closest to the Pandora rotated to face her and engaged thrusters to push itself backward. The other two ships took opposite angles and emitted a thin green beam that reached out and intersected with the forward vessel. Moments passed, during which Kate launched torpedoes and energy blasts against the frontmost ship. The rammer, already reorienting to pursue the Washington, fired countermeasures to protect the forward ship, as did the other two vessels. Between them, they eliminated the torpedoes, and the enemy ship weathered the energy blasts without apparent harm. The green beams had been intensifying with each passing second, and finally stabilized. A wide green beam erupted from the front ship. Cross watched, concern racing through him as the emerald line reached out to intercept the Pandora. "What is that thing?" was all he had time to say before the beam washed over her. The Pandora's running lights vanished, and she lurched into an uncontrolled tumble along her previous vector. The silence of the dead comm channel that connected him to Kate filled his ears. Chapter 8. Silence. Darkness. Kate had never experienced the panicked fear currently clawing its way up her throat in the darkened shell of her ship. Every instinct screamed at her, warned her of predators coming in the night. Stark terror locked down her ability to speak, threatened her ability to think. Then, like deliverance from above, the ship around her began to come back to life. It started with a soft glow on her display that grew into a blaze in the dark. The whispered, "Thank heaven," from Linda Peterson broke the silence, and Kate exhaled the breath she was holding in fear it would be her last. The bridge continued to illuminate, and the soft thrum of the ship's engines, truly more felt than heard, reasserted itself in the part of her mind that catalogued such things. The main display flickered to life and revealed the ship was tumbling on multiple axes, and the trio of enemies that had put her in this state was reorienting themselves for another blast.
"Pandora," Kate asked.
She hit commands on her display, but it failed to respond to her instructions. She catalogued her options, wondering if the small escape pods would function on reserve power when that wonderful voice spoke. It sounded like it was coming from down a deep tunnel.
"Primary systems restored. Engines at 50% and climbing. Controls will be available in 23 seconds. Weapons will be available in 76 seconds.
It lacked the normal personal touch Pandora gave her communications, sounding somewhat robotic rather than melodic. Nonetheless, it was one of the best things she'd ever heard.
"We might not have that long, Commander," Diaz said.
Kate swiveled to the main display where the lead ship in the triangle stopped moving, and the two green beams again emerged from its support ships. Kate watched the clock, and as it clicked down, she was sure the Pandora would lose the race. She only realized the Washington was coming to her rescue when it slashed into her real-time view and fired a broadside at one of the support ships. It was forced to evade, trailing the Washington's missiles as it ran, and the deadly blast from the front ship failed to materialize. Seconds later, her controls went active, and she rammed the throttles to full speed, steering on a vector toward the Washington. At that same moment, the bill for the Washington's rescue came due. She'd been forced to abandon subtlety to intervene and save the Pandora, and that allowed the rammer to get into position. The scene shifted into slow motion as it drove into the Washington's port side at full speed. Kate thought thrusters fired at the last second to push the ship away from the Zhoshin vessel, but it was too little and far too late. She imagined the sound of the armored bulkheads folding inward. The ship rebounded crazily, her own engines cutting out for an instant before sputtering back to life. The rammer fired its weapons array into the Washington's damaged side. But someone on the ship was still paying attention, and it rolled. The enemy blasts carved a deep groove into the Washington's skin as it rotated until unbroken shields and armor countered the enemy's weapons. She noted the comm systems were back and didn't quite yell, "Cross?" His reply was suffused with the sounds of a wounded ship. Alerts blared and the cacophony of many conversations required to stabilize the vessel.
"That hurt, but we're still functional. At least, for once, it wasn't the starboard side."
Lee's shout from across the bridge sounded over the channel.
"You're welcome."
Despite the dire situation, she had to laugh. Cross said, "Okay, it's 4-on-2. But I think those triple ships are less powerful than we are if we can keep them from combining. If we're fast enough, we ought to be able to take them out while avoiding the rammer. I'll go after..."
"Captain, Commander," interrupted Pandora,
returned to her normal warm tones.
"The situation has changed."
Kate looked up at the screen and saw all four ships had adopted a new heading. They were diving for the planet's surface.
"Kate, this is a bad idea," Cross said in a voice filled with concern.
"Yeah," Kate said, tapping at her displays. "But it's the only one we've got."
She wrenched the ship to vertical and blasted in pursuit. She caught up with the rear element of the enemy formation in the outer atmosphere. Missiles from the Washington had streaked ahead, but had been removed from the board by countermeasures from the four ships. Pandora had plotted the possibilities, and there was no chance, unless the enemy made a grievous mistake, to intercept the three lead ships before they reached the colony's location. However, Kate imagined they'd make strafing runs at the colony. The base's shield should be sufficient to defend against that attack from above. She could only hope they didn't get clever and try to shoot at or sacrifice themselves against the lower walls, which were less well protected. Hopefully they wouldn't know that. The humans needed at least one break, or things were going to get ugly in a hurry. That left the rammer ship. As it danced in front of her, avoiding the torrent of energy blasts she was sending its way, Kate could picture it ramming into the colony at full speed. She doubted the ship would survive, but she also doubted the colony would survive. So the rammer had become task one on her list of priorities.
Pandora, plot the rammer's trajectory for an optimal impact on the colony.
After a moment's delay, the lines drew themselves on a portion of the screen, and Kate's brain calculated the angles and presented her with an answer. She shifted onto a slightly angled vector that would keep her in range of the rammer during its descent.
Do we have any toys we haven't tried on this thing?
Pandora's voice came back, sounding amused.
No, Commander. You've used all the available weapon types I possess.
The sentence construction tickled something in the recesses of her mind.
Pandora, are you saying there are ship armament varieties that we do not currently have on board? Yes, Commander.
Kate grinned. She couldn't help herself.
Please make a note that we need to have a conversation about that when this adventure is over, Pandora. Yes, Commander.
Kate ran her thumbs down the weapon selections options, familiar enough with them by now that she no longer needed to look down. She selected drill torpedoes and launched them at the rammer, a full flight of 16 taking different routes toward the enemy vessel. The rammer's countermeasures eliminated several, but the rest evaded the defense and engaged their lasers to create divots for the drills to exploit. Kate noted the divots were unappealingly small and sent another flight after the first. All the weapons were targeted at the same radial point, about one-third of the way back from the front of the ship, and torpedoes attacked that ring on all the ship's surfaces. Meanwhile, she continued to pour max power blasts of laser and plasma into the tail of the ship, forcing the rammer's crew to defend in multiple locations at once.
What I wouldn't give for some fighters right now. I bet a large number of smaller ships would be effective against these things. It's not a tactic that has been tried, as far as I know, Commander. Certainly, some were used in the battle around your home world, but not in a deliberate and organized fashion.
Make a note about that, too.
Noted, Commander.
Kate gave a small frown and glared at the spot where Pandora's avatar often stood. She was pretty sure the ship was making fun of her.
The enemy has changed course, Commander, said Diaz. It's headed for the colony.
I hate it when I'm right, Kate said.
She launched another flight of drill torpedoes and followed it with some standard explosive torpedoes aimed at the nose of the ship to try to force it to break off. On the main display, the rammer grew in size as it curved toward the colony, and Kate's ship drew closer.
Collision in 23 seconds, Pandora said.
Armor at 5 seconds to impact, Pandora.
Acknowledged, Commander. We are not yet at full charge. The armor will last for only seconds.
Belay that order, then. Armor at 1 second before impact, assuming that'll give it time to fully engage.
Acknowledged, Commander.
The rammer increased the intensity of its barrage against the Pandora. She destroyed the incoming projectiles and weathered the energy blasts with ease. Then all Kate could do was wait and watch as Pandora counted down the time to collision. On the screen, she watched the torpedoes finish their work, hopefully weakening the impact point enough the Pandora and the colony would survive this test. Her energy barrages cut off at 2 seconds, so the blowback wouldn't damage her. Then the armor cascaded onto the hull, and the ship took a huge jolt as it speared the rammer. Kate was thrown against her restraints and bit her tongue, her mouth filled with the salty tang of blood as they blasted through the rammer. The main display skewed wildly as the ship spun along its length, and she fought hard with the thrusters to adjust it, gaining control just in time to screech over the heads of one of the advancing columns. Any lower, and she would have been breaking the Domeki code of honor.
"Show me the colony," she said
as she hit the ventral thrusters and sent the Pandora into a climb. The main display gave an aerial view of the still intact base.
"Diaz! Guard against the other 3 ships.
An external view that Pandora trained on the rammer was added to the information on the screen. Kate's maneuver had deflected it from its target and sent it careening into the rear of one of the 4 sets of alien soldiers. Charred remains of bodies littered the ground in its wake,
and the rammer itself had come to rest against a large hill, driven sideways into it. She hit the buttons to magnify the screen and saw that the front section of the ship had been mostly detached from the back. Only a few points of connection remained. She gave an exhausted smile.
"Well, that worked. What's the damage?"
"We've taken significant injury to the hull, to both broadsides, and to some internal components, Commander,"
her tactical officer said.
"Estimates on repair, Pandora?"
"If we avoid combat, I estimate the ship will be 75% repaired within 2.3 days, Commander. However, some of our weapons components will need to be remanufactured. Unfortunately, we don't have the raw materials to replace all of them in our ship's stores."
"That's less than optimal," Kate said.
"I concur, Commander," replied Pandora. "Therefore, I suggest a detour when this battle is over."
Diaz interrupted.
"Commander, the marine shuttles are inbound, but the enemy ships are strafing the colony."
"Do we have comms?"
Linda Peterson answered.
"I'm attempting to boost the signal now, using the drones from the Washington."
The jamming intensity seemed to decrease as a result of her actions. A moment later, Saint's voice chided her.
"It's about time, Red. We asked for support quite a while ago."
Kate smothered a curse and said,
"No time for pleasant formalities, Saint. Peterson will connect you to the colony. Coordinate as short of a shield drop as you can, and we'll cover for you against the strafing runs."
"Acknowledged,"
Saint said, and switched off. The Pandora swooped around and blocked the enemies one by one as they closed, accepting shield depletion to keep them from interfering with the Marines' arrival at the colony. A few minutes later, it was done, and the shield flickered back to life atop the colony. Now, with added Marines, Kate blew out a breath. She opened a channel to the entire ship and said,
"All right, people, who wants to go play in the dirt?"
Chapter 9. The ramp unfolded in front of her, and Sinner led the six Marines of her squad out of the shuttle. To her right, St. John strode at the head of his troops. The two sergeants stopped in the center, and their subordinates fanned out to create a loose perimeter, with rifles down, but ready to react. They landed in the town square, a crossroads where six streets came together in an open space. One- and two-story structures predominated, with a few that rose higher and were made of brick and something that looked like wood, presumably harvested locally. They were well-maintained and showed the pride the colonists felt for the lives they'd created on this planet, the lives the damned birds were trying to snuff out. She removed her helmet and let it dangle from a strap attached to her armor. Saint did the same.
"What do you think?"
Saint gave her a grin.
"I think this is much more attractive than the last colony we fought in."
Sinner laughed.
"Hopefully the people in charge aren't quite as stupid this time around."
"Looks like we're about to find out,"
he said, and pointed over her shoulder. She turned to see a group of civilians advancing toward them. The front two, a woman and a man, projected an aura of confidence and responsibility, despite being dressed in the same functional working clothes as those around them. They stopped at a polite distance, and the woman said,
"Thank you for responding to our distress call. How can we help you defend our home?"
She looked back over her shoulder and spoke just loudly enough for Saint to hear.
"Now that's a proper reception right there."
She turned to the colonists.
"We have extra rifles in the shuttle for any of your citizens who are unarmed. Get as many people outfitted with weapons as possible. Whatever armor you have, strap it on. Send us whoever's in charge of your defense, and we'll coordinate with them."
"That'd be me,"
said the other man, who looked like he'd been a bodybuilder once but was now just strong from hard labor.
"Stevens, Army, retired, and while we don't have a militia as such, we do have a bunch of people that deal with the local predators whenever they become an issue."
"Big?"
Sinner asked. The colonist shrugged.
"They range from about the size of a wolf to about the size of a grizzly. The only time they're a problem is when the entire pack gets their blood up for some reason. We try to stay within the walls when that happens."
"That's a starting point, and not a bad one at that,"
She pointed off to her right and said,
"How about you give me a tour while Saint organizes these marines?"
The man gave her a nod, and they walked off to inspect the colony's defenses. 3/4 of an hour later, Sinner had rejoined them. They were still fully armored, but were taking the moment of downtime to prepare weapons and take the edge off their hunger. She crossed to where Saint was sitting and lowered herself beside him. A box of ration bars sat open nearby, and she freed one from its container and chewed as she spoke.
"The birds will be in range shortly. The colony has guns on the corners. Good-sized laser cannons with spreaders on them."
"That's handy," Saint replied. The spreaders would take a solid beam and reshape it into a cone. Less intensity, but wider coverage. Perfect for anti-personnel actions. "Do you think they'll be adequate to cover everywhere?"
"I think we can focus on 2 areas instead of 4, if that's what you mean. I'm not sure they'll be able to hold off the birds from those directions forever, but they should be able to for a while, unless the enemy gets some lucky shots in."
Saint frowned.
"We should put colonists up there with rifles to assist in case the aliens manage to get under the weapons deflection." "Agreed," Sinner said, and motioned for the team's sniper. "Time to get to work, Easy. Grab some civilians who have rifles and position them up next to the heavy weapons, at least 1 on each side. Then you and your spotter find a nest."
Isabel Styler snapped off a salute that somehow managed to look sarcastic and dashed off to make it happen. With a shake of her head, Sinner sat down again.
"So, that leaves us with 2. I have a thought on that. How about we do the same thing we did on the planet of idiots, and allow 1 group to breach before the other? That way we can thin them out before we have to deal with the rest."
"It's risky. I take it you don't think the walls will hold."
Sinner shook her head.
"If there's 1 thing we know about the birds, it's that they've got good gear, and they know how to use it. They'll have come prepared to break through the walls."
"Yeah, that makes sense. All right, let's get it done."
He stood and walked away. Sinner moved to where Gordon G. Wiz Wilkinson sat, surrounded by equipment crates. A long power line ran to a nearby building to supplement the kit's batteries.
"What do you see?"
"I give it 10 minutes tops, Gunnery Sergeant. They have a good sense of how far our heavy weapons can shoot, and they're gathering a few meters beyond that range. They look to be working themselves up and making final checks."
"It's too bad we don't have any armed drones for this battle, eh?"
"Who knew we'd be fighting out in the open air? That certainly wasn't the plan when we set out for the Zhoshin system."
"I'm sure you'll get your chance to fight indoors before we're done with this little adventure," she consoled him.
"In the meantime, time to lock and load, Gunnery Sergeant."
"Spread the word,"
she said, and donned her helmet. The comforting whir of servos reassured her it was locked and sealed. Saint came pounding back to the town center.
"We're set for them to breach to the east. The guns will focus on the north and south, and we've got colonists on the wall to the west to discourage the birds as much as possible. We've got a few up on the east, too, for appearance's sake. I plan to retreat quickly as the enemy advances."
"Sounds great. Shall we take these people east?"
She waved to indicate the surrounding marines. Saint replied with a nod, then secured his own helmet.
"Set us up, G-Wiz,"
she ordered. A moment later, their displays were populated with standard combat deployment content. In 1 corner, she could see the health readings from the 6 marines under her command. The take from the primary drone, showing the advance from the east, appeared in a small block on the lower left. The rest of the display was devoted to the 360-degree view around her, supplemented with overlays monitoring her suit's status, ammunition remaining, and a host of other vital details. Wilkinson's voice sounded across the channel that linked them all.
"The birds are moving. I'll monitor the other walls and call out problems. 4 drones are up and watching. Our other surprises are ready to deploy."
Sinner reached the area Saint and the colonists had prepared and grimaced. It was well designed, with blockades and fallback positions to provide cover and keep the enemy in a tight column as they breached. The problem was the blockades were made of wood rather than stone, and would be scant protection. They'd be in a running battle from the first moment of bad luck. She triggered a connection to Saint.
"It's far from perfect," she said.
"Best we could do with what we had, Sin."
"Story of our lives. Just once I want to go into one of these battles with full intel and in full gear.
Saint laughed. Ha ha! Now you're sounding like army.
That's an evil, evil thing to say, Saint. I'm going to personally kick the daylights out of you at our next training session.
He laughed, then killed the channel. She shook her head with a snort.
Army. As if.
She activated her suit's jets and leapt to the top of the wall. Two of her marines followed her, then moved to create space between them. She crouched and sighted her rifle on the lead enemy elements.
Just a little closer, she said,
her trigger finger carrying all the tension of the moment. Finally, they were close enough, and death reached in both directions. Her team took down three enemies in the first second, but the lightly protected colonists were forced from the walls by a hail of projectiles from the enemy's long guns. Explosions marched along the wall, signaling yet another new twist from the aliens, detonating rounds. Again, she shook her head, annoyed at the constant rediscovery that the enemy had new ways to kill them.
"Stay alert," she said. "If they're close enough to be accurate, get off the wall. We don't need to see what that ammunition can do before they arrive."
She followed her own advice as a bullet pinged nearby and blew off a section of the wall. She landed smoothly behind a barricade and leveled her rifle across it. The take from the drone overhead showed the enemy setting explosive charges at the center of the wall.
"Think they would have gotten through without our help?"
"These walls are pretty thick. Our satchels would require a couple of rounds."
"Let's hope, because the more time we get on the ones to the west, the more time we have to get rid of these guys."
The enemy's explosives detonated, demolishing part of the wall, but failed to penetrate. Saint triggered their own munitions immediately after, creating a meter-wide fissure. The Marines poured fire through the opening, taking out the lead elements that had been waiting to attack under cover of the explosions. Enemy soldiers returned fire into the gap and the surrounding walls in an effort to widen the breach. The wall was largely immune to their efforts, and they abandoned that plan in favor of an all-out rush. More fell to the defenders as they ran into the kill zone, but their return fire destroyed the protective barricades, and the Marines and colonists were forced to fall back.
"Keep it up!"
Saint yelled, then asked, "Gee whiz! Status!" Sinner killed two Droshin soldiers with headshots, ejected her spent power cell, and rammed another in place while she waited for the reply.
"They should be through the west wall in less than 2 minutes. Their first explosives didn't get through, but they're providing enough cover that the second team of breachers is placing their devices now."
"Damn it! I'd hoped for longer. Oh well," she said with a sigh, then followed up in a happy tone. "Execute surprise one."
Saint's team had preset the area with the modern version of Claymore mines. At a signal from Gee Whiz, they armed themselves and shot out from small holes they'd drilled in the ground. They hovered in the air for an instant before firing in ranks, starting with those nearest the wall and marching back toward the defenders. Each released spherical objects with a sharp edge, running along the longitudinal and latitudinal axes. The force of the explosions drove the tiny projectiles into, and in most cases through, the enemy's armor, the combination of dense core and bladed exterior shredding the enemy soldiers.
"Fall back," Sinner ordered. "My team, run and gun if needed back to the town square."
Additional civilian reinforcements waited there to safeguard their retreat.
"My team, hightail it to the west wall,"
Saint added, and his group sprinted away. Sinner followed her people, heading back to oversee the full battle with Gee Whiz. As she ran, she said,
"Execute surprise two."
Before the smoke had cleared from their vicious counterassault, battle robots rolled in from hiding places nearby and created a semicircle around the breach to the east. Each time they sensed an enemy, they concentrated fire on it until it was no more. Their cover fire to protect one another was highly effective, and the center one, which was the most vulnerable, was protected by the sniper team. Sinner grinned as the breach stabilized. The birds, at least for the moment, were unable to find an answer to the mechanical defenders.
"I love those things," she said over the main channel. "We need more of them."
"Do you know how much those things cost?"
Gee Whiz asked.
Take it out of Saint's pay, she replied. He doesn't need it.
Friendlies incoming,
came a welcome voice over the comm, and Sinner looked up to see the bulk of the Pandora position itself over the colony, slightly tilted toward the starboard. A hatch in the side opened, and a figure jumped out, quickly followed by several others. The shield dropped just in time to permit them access and shimmered back to life above them. The armored figures landed on the ground, quick blasts of suit thrusters slowing them to a safe velocity and throwing dust and debris around the town square.
"Pandora's almost got the signal block figured out," Kate said, "so we should be able to find out what's going on upstairs shortly."
Sinner walked over to Kate and put a hand on her shoulder in greeting. Kate's helmet bobbed in acknowledgement.
"Kate," Sinner asked. "Yes?" "You seem to have most of your crew with you."
"Yes," she replied. "All of them, in fact."
"Who's flying the ship?"
"Pandora."
"Do you think that's a good idea?"
The ship's amused voice joined the conversation.
"Of course she does, Gunnery Sergeant Murphy. Why else would she have done it?"
Sinner was momentarily at a loss for words.
"We have a lot to catch up on," Kate said.
"Seems like it," Sinner replied. "How about we get rid of these birds and break open a case of beer?"
"Sounds great."
"West wall breach,"
Wilkinson reported. Kate and her troops took off in that direction. Murphy shook her head at their departing backs.
"Battle robots, ships that fly themselves, bird people with heavy weapons. What is this universe coming to?"
she said to herself, then turned to see what other mayhem she could inflict upon the alien attackers.
Chapter 10.
"Get some eyes up,"
Kate ordered, and Santiago Diaz and Sean Wickrens launched tiny devices that had been attached to hardpoints on their arms. The thin cylinders unfolded as they flew to reveal stubby wings with built-in rotor fans. They started to spin as the miniature vehicles shifted into hover mode. The take from each flowed into the team's combat displays, according to a preset set of instructions included in the armor's computers.
"Sensors," Kate said, and Trey Winstell ran close to the wall and fanned out his arms.
His suit was outfitted for the battle, with advanced detection modules, and tiny circles dotted every surface of his armor. A backpack provided computer power, and the sensor take flowed into their heads-up display as well.
"Okay, we have between 60 and 80 heat signatures in the range of Zhroshin normal out there. Chemical and metal sensors have identified that most are carrying standard-issue weapons, but there's also an abundance of things we can't identify from the suit's records."
"Lovely," observed St. John. "It's too bad the science folks couldn't interface our displays."
"We'll figure it out eventually," Kate said. "In an ideal universe, during a long and enduring time of peace, devoted to exploration and scientific research."
Saint snorted.
"Sounds frightfully boring. I'll truly have to open that bar."
They finally reached the center of the wall and saw the alien soldiers darting into view to take occasional shots at the defenders, but not pursuing their advantage by progressing through the breach.
"This doesn't bode well. What do you think they're up to?" Kate asked.
"No way to tell. Everyone stay on your toes," Saint said.
On the feed from the drones, the reason for the delay was revealed. Several enemies had been carrying components to a larger weapon which had protected it from the Pandora's strafing runs. They inclined the barrel toward the top of the wall and fired. A cascade of tiny orbs shot out, cleared the wall, and landed in the courtyard with a metallic clatter. Once there, they paused for a second, then wobbled into motion and accelerated at the defending Marines.
"Look out!"
Kate yelled, firing at the ones rolling toward her and finding them difficult targets to hit.
"They're homing in on the metal, using a magnetic field to propel themselves," said Winstell.
"Jump back!"
Saint ordered, and the Marines used their suit jets to leap away from the incoming metal. One wasn't fast enough, and the tiny spheres flowed up his armor until he was fully encased in them. There was a blast of light and the smell of ozone. Then the Marine fell, his suit scorched and blackened. Saint charged the downed figure, attaching a tether and pulling him along the line of retreat.
"Civilians, take out the little balls if you can,"
he He heard firing intermixed with more sparks and sizzles as the magnetic orbs found the metal rifles of the defenders. Kate and her team stepped forward to block the way.
"Our suits have figured out a reverse magnetic field," she said. "We can take the first line."
Sure enough, the metal balls grew confused as they neared the Domeki combat armor and rolled around ineffectively until they ran out of power. The aliens had taken advantage of the distraction to create a beachhead inside the wall, and the lead elements poured fire at them. They were forced to give ground by the sheer volume of incoming damage, which steadily depleted the suit's physical and energy protection.
"Grenades!" Kate called,
and a mix of munitions sailed into the enemy ranks and detonated. Fire and electricity mixed with percussion and smoke, creating a precious lull in the incoming barrage.
"Webs!"
Kate ordered, and the web grenades Pandora had constructed, based on UAL schematics, flew in to coat the invaders in that sticky substance and provide a momentary barrier to those seeking to enter. Kate's team turned and ran, taking cover positions along each of the three lanes that led from the outer wall to the inner portion of the colony. G-Wiz announced,
"North and south enemy columns have been eliminated. Our heavy weapons have taken damage but are still functional. The ones to the east will assist with that column, but the ones to the west have no angle."
"Get the operators out of there,"
Saint said, and the tiny figures hopped out of the protective shells and ran along the walls toward a safe position to climb down.
"It won't be long until the enemy decides to take them out,"
Saint said. Sure enough, shortly thereafter, loud explosions marked the destruction of the heavy weapons in those directions. Zhroshin scouts crept carefully down each of the streets. Kate and her team watched them advance, sharing camera feeds in their displays. As one, they eliminated the exploring aliens, then fell back to secondary positions as the enemy evacuated the entrance bottleneck by climbing or bounding up to the tops of the structures. The sniper rifle sounded repeatedly as the enemy came clear of obstructions, but they were too many and too quick.
"They're burning the buildings,"
Easy said from her perch atop the highest. Curses flew across the channel as the humans vented their outrage. The fire raced from building to building and chased the enemy toward the town square. When they arrived, they marched into the teeth of 12 angry Marines and 2 incensed gunnery sergeants, who mowed them down as quickly as they appeared. The Pandora's crew fell back, and soon they'd corralled the remaining enemy troops, 7 of them, who gathered in a rough circle, rifles pointed out at the encircling humans. Kate triggered her external microphone in translation protocol. She said,
"Lower your weapons, and you'll be permitted to live."
The apparent leader made a disgusted sound.
"Ha! Become prisoners of you, vermin? Not a chance. We'll die instead and go on to paradise when your scourge is wiped from the universe."
"As you wish," Saint said, and headshots decapitated 6 of the 7 as they started to move. The remaining one was wounded but charged at Kate, arms outstretched as if he'd grab her. She stumbled backward, and the world seemed to shift into slow motion. She saw the devices, tiny and blinking, right at the edge of her visual range, so much so that it hurt to focus upon them. It took Sinner forever to scream the word,
"Sacrifice!"
syllable by drawn-out syllable. Kate started to twist away, certain her depleted armor couldn't save her from death if those really were the explosive devices they appeared to be. Her last thought during the slow time was,
"This was an incredibly stupid way to die,"
and she would have wished for a better one. Everything sped up again as she fell to the ground, and the 2 gunnery sergeants tackled the soldier. There was a shattering explosion, and they were hurled aside like projectiles from his siege weapons, slamming into and, in Sinner's case, through the walls of the nearby structures. Where the alien had been was just a smoking stain.
"Ow!"
Sinner said with a notable whine.
"At least your wall gave,"
Saint replied in a rasping growl. He coughed.
"Mine hurt a lot more."
"I can't believe they packed such a big wallop in such a small package."
"Thank all that's holy. We hadn't used our personal shields,"
he panted.
"Saint?"
"Yes, Sinner?"
"You turned your shield on first. Coward."
Kate released the fear and the stress
and the pain in a long laugh she hoped didn't sound as hysterical as it felt. After a few hours of rest, recuperation, bandaging, and debriefing, Kate and her crew stood facing the Marines.
"I miss you all," Kate said.
"We miss you too, Red," said Saint.
"You're still welcome to run with us any time, Kate," added Sinner. "The rest of you as well. You're wasted on a ship."
Kate laughed.
"Hear that, Cross?"
The jamming defeated, he was able to reply.
"Don't let them fool you. They're just jealous you have skills in both areas."
"It's true," Sinner said. "If only more of you, certain captains, let's say, possessed such skills, we might have won this thing already."
"Washington out," Cross replied,
and the humans on the planet shared goodbyes. Kate watched the colony diminish underneath her as the tether from the Pandora pulled her up. The hatch closed to block the side of the planet away, and the ship launched itself toward its next task.
Chapter 11.
Cross surveyed the sector through the front viewport of the shuttle, carrying him to the Chicago. The vista was filled with ships, decks of every size and configuration. For the first time in history, all of Earth's armada was in one place. Well, all the fully functional ones. They'd addressed the argument that sending so much of their force on the assault left their territory undefended by leaving behind damaged but still viable ships at strategic defense points. Cross thought doing so was most likely an exercise in denial, but the decision hadn't been his to make. He jerked his attention back to the present. The sight of Alliance ships hanging side by side with those from the Union gave him a warm feeling, even amidst the dire concerns that had brought them together here. He drummed his fingers as the pilot slipped the shuttle deftly into the Chicago's hangar and was walking down the ramp before it had finished descending. It took but a moment to pick her out from the crowd, and he dodged ship personnel to gather Kate into a giant hug. No words were exchanged, the physical contact sufficient to provide all the commitment and reinforcement necessary.
"Break it up, Commander, Captain," said the amused voice of Captain First Rank Dima Petraeff as he approached.
Cross shared a handshake with Dima and complimented him on the new medals adorning his uniform. Dima said,
"They tell me I'm very brave and give me trinkets with which to display their notice of it."
He reached up to polish one of them with the uniform sleeve.
"I think their interpretation of bravery might differ from mine, but they nonetheless committed our forces to this endeavor, so I'm content."
"Do you think we'll get medals for this?" Kate asked, a wry grin on her face.
"Hopefully we'll be around to receive them,"
Cross answered. The others nodded in response, and they headed together for the lift to take them to the Admiral's conference. Admiral James Okoye intercepted them before they entered the meeting room.
"Flynn, Petraeff, Cross, good to see you."
He gripped Cross's hand warmly when it was his turn and put his other hand on his shoulder. The evident apology on his face was met by Cross's own look of understanding, and just like that, everything was right between them again.
"Feels good to have the old team together," Kate said.
"Feels good to be all on the same team for once."
With a nod of agreement, Okoye opened the door and ushered them into the meeting room. The space was enormous, plenty large enough to provide seating for all the assembled captains and admirals. The chairs were arranged in concentric circles, with aisles at intervals and an empty space in the middle. Admiral Wilder stood from his place in the inner circle and strode to the exact center of the arrangement.
"Captains, admirals, thank you for coming. New information has come to light that'll influence where we go from here, and the Admiralty believed it too important to be decided by us alone. Commandant Gillian, would you please summarize the situation?"
He sat, and a tall, muscular woman, the top-ranking Marine, took his place.
"The Zhoshin have launched a series of attacks on colonies belonging to both the UAL and the AAN, similar to the attack some of you have already encountered. They are committing a significant amount of personnel and equipment to these assaults,
What we must decide, here and now, is how we will respond.
She waved an arm at an aide, and a holographic display of the relevant systems appeared over her head. Planets with colonies were represented as solid, rather than just outlines, and those under attack pulsed with a faint red highlight.
As you can see, they've struck at a wide variety of worlds. Our strategists can identify no particular reason for these colonies to have been chosen, other than the clustering might suggest reinforcement vessels ready to deploy.
At her words, zones appeared, shaded subtly in different colors, to show groupings and potential support locations. Wilder rose again and took center stage.
Thank you, Commandant Jillian.
He paused a moment, letting the side conversations that had begun during the transition fall away.
We must decide what to do now. Do we pursue our original goal of a fast attack on the aliens' homeworld? Or do we delay and protect our colonists from the Zhroshan attacks?
He gestured, and another member of the inner circle stood.
I have asked Admiral Clifford to provide the argument for continuing on as planned.
A portly man, easily in his 70s, cross-judged, stepped into the circle. His uniform was festooned with countless medals earned as the primary strategist for the UAL Navy.
Simply put, captains, this is at best a delaying tactic, and at worst, it is a delaying tactic with traps awaiting the ships that ride to the defense of the colonies.
He gestured at the display above.
We'll need to head away from our objective, the home system of the Zhroshan, to travel to these settlements. Based on data collected from the ships we sent to deal with the attacks closest to Earth, the Zhroshan are sending significant numbers, enough that we need to submit more than half of our fleet to ensure even strength, and additional ships at in-between points to respond to unexpected situations.
Clifford shook his head and spread his hands in a beseeching gesture.
Simply put, this will halt our advance for an unknown time. During that delay, we can rest assured the enemy will not be still.
At a gesture, the display changed into a linear plot with the aliens' home system on one end and the endangered colonies on the other. Trajectories were drawn in to illustrate ship routes, as they'd be if the group chose to defend the colonies. It was quickly obvious the fleet would wind up dispersed and unable to launch a direct attack without again gathering in a common location to coordinate the action.
So, basically,
Cross whispered to Kate, if we defend the colonies, we throw away the time spent getting here.
Thanks. I could have never figured that out for myself,
she drawled in sarcastic response. She punctuated it with a backhand slap to his solar plexus, and he doubled over in pretend agony. Admiral Clifford continued.
It's clear we cannot just abandon the efforts we've made so far to respond to these attacks. When we push forward into the aliens' home, they'll be forced to withdraw their own forces to defend against us. That protects our colonies better than responding to this provocation does. Thank you.
He returned to his seat, and the room filled with low conversation. Several moments later, an officer in the uniform of the Allied Asian Nations rose and stepped into the center of the circle. In a booming voice, he said,
I am Admiral of the Fleet, Viktor Volkov. I've been asked to present the opposite case, a rationale for protecting our colonies and delaying our advance. There are two reasons to make this choice. The first is purely strategic. The enemy has distributed its ships across a wide swath of the galaxy. We can build a strategy that allows us to bring overwhelming force to one after the next, rather than separating our ships, as they no doubt expect us to do. This imposes additional risk upon the colonists, but we can prioritize according to their likelihood of defending themselves without our assistance. We'll engage first in defense of these colonies with the greatest population at the greatest risk and work our way toward smaller risk and smaller populations from there. We'll attack each with overwhelming force and move on to the next.
As he spoke, the hologram over his head redrew itself yet again, this time offering the original display with ship trajectories marked upon it.
I caution you, these aren't final analyses, as we are still assessing risk scenarios. However, this approach gives us the numerical advantage to smash their ships while they're away from the support of the rest of their fleet. It will cost us time, but we'll trade that time for the ability to weaken the resistance we'll ultimately face in their home system.
The display blanked, and the Admiral folded his hands in front of him.
The second reason, of course, is the more important one. Our enemies have judged rightly that we're not a species that will casually spend the lives of our civilians to reach a military end. When necessary, we have before and we will again make that terrible choice. But I'd argue that it's not now essential, and we must live up to our best ideals and protect those who cannot protect themselves.
He stopped speaking and stood silently. The weight of his words sunk into Cross's soul and planted a pit of anger and frustration into his stomach. He sensed the rest of the room grow still and hard as well, and the space remained silent for several seconds. Volkov broke the stillness with a quiet,
"Thank you,"
and returned to his seat. There were no conversations this time, only anticipation. Admiral Wilder rose and regarded the gathered officers.
Does anyone wish to add additional commentary before we judge the will of the Assembly?
No one did.
Those who believe we should move to defend our colonies in the manner Admiral of the Fleet Volkov suggests, please signify by raising your right hand.
Fully 90% of the hands in the room extended toward the ceiling. The Admiral nodded.
Thank you, Captains, Admirals. I believe to this question there is indeed a right answer, and I believe you've chosen it.
Wilder detailed the existing plans for that option, which included sending probes far and wide to gather additional information about their enemy during the time they'd be distracted from their main purpose. Hours later, after an extensive discussion of strategy and tactics for the defense of their citizens, the meeting broke up and everyone returned to their ships, with one or two exceptions.
I can't believe we've got all these ships together, and now we're all going to split up again, Cross said.
He reached over and brushed a stray lock of hair out of Kate's eyes and reveled in the sensation of his fingers on her skin. She propped herself up on an elbow, mimicking his posture, and replied,
You know it's the right thing to do.
Of course, no question. Still, I'd like to slap whatever alien came up with the strategy.
Kate laughed.
Hopefully we'll get that chance sooner rather than later.
The hitch in her voice told him the topic she'd been avoiding was soon to be revealed. He looked around her cabin, admiring the way the candles flickered and wafted the scent of vanilla throughout the space. Just for a moment, he could imagine they were together in a shared abode, with nothing more to worry about than the daily tasks of life on a forward colony. He snorted inwardly. Colony life didn't really seem all that romantic, right at the moment, regardless of what long-told stories of nostalgic frontier adventure might suggest.
Cross, I have to tell you something.
Kate's voice was soft, and he heard regret in it.
Okay,
he said, looking into her eyes.
When we depart to defend the colony we've been assigned, the Pandora is going to go somewhere else.
Where?
She told us we need to visit another Domeki base that's nearby. She assures me we'll be back in plenty of time to rejoin you, either for later colony attacks or for the final assault.
Cross could see and hear the honest regret as she spoke. He gave her a reassuring smile.
Of course you do,
he said, trying to control his voice. Kate narrowed her eyes at him, searching his expression, and hissed.
You already knew.
The flat palm strike to his chest came as a surprise, though. He rolled onto his back, letting the laughter out.
Of course I knew. I could see it in your face from the moment we were assigned.
She crawled on top of him, putting one leg on either side of his ribs and squeezing them tight. The necklace she wore glinted in the candlelight, and the pendant, his academy insignia, swung as she placed her hands beside his head and put her eyes inches